The Off the Ball Rugby Roadshow is coming to your province. Join some of the biggest stars from Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht as we travel round the country to preview the 2026-27 rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Gilban, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Football Daily.
And welcome along to Friday's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, St Pat's and Shamrock Rovers meet in Inchicore in a game that should go a long way in deciding the destination of the Premier Division title. Manchester United marked their return to the Champions League with a win at Old Trafford, and John Egan gives his insight on the jump from the Championship to the Premier League. But first, despite an inconsistent season, St Pat's could be top of the Premier Division by 10 p.m. on Monday night. But for that to happen, they'd have to do something they haven't done this season, and that's beat Shamrock Rovers in the league. Stephen Kenny's side may have knocked Rovers out of the FAI Cup last month, but Pats have lost all three league meetings this season between the two and haven't scored a goal in any of those games. The Saints lost to Bohemians on penalties in the quarterfinals of the FAI Cup last week. Rovers haven't won any of their last six games in all competitions. Speaking to St Pat's in-house media channel, Stephen Kenny says he's proud of his players' resilience over the last few weeks.
It was a tough week last week. I was so proud of the players and the performances over the last few weeks, and particularly the game last week where so resilient and created those chances in extra time, and in the end losing out on the shootout. It was a difficult one, Bizarro G, of course. So very proud of, like, everyone gave everything, and I think there's been, when one considers the, you know, a lot of how many setbacks we've had this year, and yet here we are, seven games to go, second in the table, with the league leaders, first coming here to Richmond Park tomorrow night, and we've got to get ourselves ready and make sure that we're really ready for it. Obviously, the cup games have been 120 minutes the last couple of cup games we've had. Some very good league wins and a league defeat. So we've had, and everyone has had highs and lows, and because the league has been so competitive from 1 to 10, every team has been so competitive this year. So from our point of view, we got to get back on track, look forward to the game, and bring the level of performance that we need, in Richmond Park, which is our home ground, and we're very proud of it.
Kick-off at Richmond Park is 8 o'clock. You can hear live and exclusive commentary of that game with Ben Symes and Owen Heary and Off the Ball and News Talk and the Go Loud app. Our coverage, as always, starts from 7 o'clock. Elsewhere tonight, Waterford will be aiming to pull further ahead of the bottom two when they face Dundalk at the RFC. Waterford are unbeaten in 11 games in all competitions and are currently 4 points ahead of Drogheda in ninth and 9 ahead of bottom side Sligo Rovers. Drogheda and Sligo meet at Sullivan and Lamb Park tonight. Shelburne are just 4 points behind fourth place Dundalk. John Russell's side are at home to Derry City, who could move above Shells with the win. Meanwhile, Bohemians will look to keep the pressure on Rovers at the top, but they have a tough challenge away to Galway United. And on the LOI pod this week, Ben Symes broached the topic with Gareth McGlynn and Vinnie Perth about Bows and if their fans really believe they can win the league.
We know the history that they've had in the last 15 years or so when it comes to these stages of competitions, but it does feel like something might be going right for Alan Reynolds' squad here, Gareth.
Yeah,
Ben sounds like a dreamer, Gareth, doesn't he? He's doing Steve-O's dreaming for him.
That's what I was going to say. You think it's Steve-O talking?
I'm doing the dream without actually being a Bows fan. So I'm. If you can go at me, you can go at me for a lot of things. You can't go at me for this. I will be neutral to all.
But before Gareth answers, right? Let me be a bit. I won't use the word I was going to use. Well, like, if you don't dream, by the way, when you go into sport, you never achieve it. They have to believe they can win the league and do a double. They have to. Is that a long shot? 100% is. But if you're not in that dressing room and you're not thinking or you're not daydreaming about, if Pats were to win this week, it's probably best result for Bows is Pats win this week and we win on the road. We're 3 points behind and we still have to play Rovers. then you're in the wrong sport, man. You know, or you're not going to achieve an awful lot. So you have to dream.
Have to be. And not only that, you've got Galway and Sligo your next two games. Bose do. I mean, if Pats were to win that against Shamrock Rovers, right, by the way, if they play as well as they did in the semi-final or the quarter-final there, I think they have a good chance of beating Rovers. Like, this is not a Rovers that are flying. They're hurt. They're out of Europe. They're not going that well. Three draws out of the last five and two wins. It's not blistering form. But Bose 100%, especially at home. That was the key to the semi-final draw. They needed to be at home. To be at home in Dalymount, last FEA Cup game, I mean, they will be absolutely buzzing. It's just a pity they got probably the other informed team in the league, which is Waterford. I think if you had asked Bose, they would have preferred Derry or Galway, believe it or not, in Dalymount. But they got Waterford, and they're just going to have to dispatch them. And then they look forward to a special final.
Remember, you can listen to the LOI Pod each and every week in your OTB Football podcast feed for free. Those games I mentioned start at 7:45, apart from our commentary game, which has an 8 o'clock kickoff. In the first division, the race for the playoff spots continues. Cork City, who were already crowned champions last week, welcome Cove Ramblers to Turner's Cross. Fourth place Kerry are at home to third place Bray Wanderers. Second place UCD take on Athlone Town, who are 2 points outside the playoff places with 6 games to go. And third from bottom Wexford are at home to the bottom side Finn Harps. Those games all kick off at 7:45. John Egan could find himself at the heart of the Irish defence over the next few weeks during the international window. The Corkman's been one of the standout players in the Premier League season so far. And he told Shane Hannan and Enda Call on this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast about how Hull have adapted from making the jump from the Championship to the top division in England.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, togetherness is huge. I suppose, a lot of the lads who played in the playoff final started the first league game. I know we've signed a lot of players too, which is brilliant to bring competition into the group. But I think if you have that continuity, we had it the first year, we went up with Sheffield United. And we had a really good season. And then, you know, the second time we went up with Sheffield United, there was a lot of change. We lost the likes of Sander Burge, Illeman and Dye, Tommy Doyle. You know, we lost some big players. So, you know, our squad probably wasn't as strong in the Premier League than it was in the Championship. But, you know, here at Hull, we've added to the squad. We've got a lot of quality in the squad. You know, lads that were here last year and a lot of new lads who've, you know, brought in a lot of quality. So, yeah, we've definitely improved as a squad and we've a really good manager, you know, who knows how to handle people. So I think that's all kind of mixed in so far, and we've managed to gel the new lads into the group quite quickly. Still a bit to go with that, but, you know, the signs are there. The attitude of everyone that's coming is good and they're buying into what we're doing.
Was there a little bit of a surprise within the squad that you did get to the Premier League? Because I guess out of the teams that were in the playoff spots, you might have been the surprise candidates in terms of where the season was at over the course of it. But then eventually you do get up to the Premier League, and then as soon as you get up, most of the narrative is, oh, well, Hull City are going straight back down. Hull City are going to be at the bottom of the league. Did that get into the dressing room at all? Does that bother you at all? Or does that just even add a little bit of spark within the dressing room to prove these people wrong?
No, and it's quite funny because people don't do their research. Like, everyone was surprised maybe that we went up through the playoffs, but if you kind of look at all the playoff teams, we probably had the most players who'd, you know, been promoted or played in the Premier League. You know, we've the likes of Shemi been promoted to West Brom, myself being promoted twice at Sheffield United. You know, Ryan Giles had played in the Premier League with Luton, been up and around it with Middlesbrough as well, nearly getting promoted. Ollie McBurney being promoted, John Lundstrom being promoted. Like, you know, I could name out another few lads, but we kind of had a lot of players like that who, you know, had already been there and done it. And I suppose when we played the teams in the playoffs, we knew that would stand to us. You know, the big games in the playoffs weren't really, you know, they were probably bigger for the other teams than they were for us, because we'd kind of been through it before and done it. So, yeah, especially in the final, I think the final kind of showed that we were locked, you know, we were really calm. And the longer the game went on, Middlesbrough had the ball, but the longer the game went on, I think, you know, the especially the last 20 minutes, I think, you know, our experience showed and we got over the line.
And you can listen to Off the Ball Breakfast each and every weekday morning from 7:30 on the Go Loud app, and it's also on YouTube. Manchester United boss Michael Carrick has praised his side for a professional job last night.
Good performance individually, collectively, all, pretty much all the way through the game, from start to finish. Boys that started, boys that came on the pitch, and clean sheet and some goals and some good exciting football. It was a good night all around. Yeah.
United kicked off their Champions League campaign with a comfortable 4-0 win at home to Sabah of Azerbaijan. That was United's first game back in the Champions League for almost 3 years. Mateus Cunha, Bruno Fernandes, Benjamin Šeško and Lisandro Martinez scored the goals. It was Šeško's second goal in as many games, and Carrick says the big Slovenian is difficult to handle.
It's kind of the beauty of it, really, that we know what Ben gives us, and there's not many around that kind of give you what Ben does in terms of his physicality, his speed to run in behind. You know, he's a real threat. Great to have him back. Good performances, good minutes in him, so we're really pleased with the way he's gone.
Elsewhere in the Champions League last night, Fenerbahce boss Ismail Kartal announced his resignation after his side drew 1-1 at home to Roma. Minutes later, the club president said Kartal would stay in the job. He shocked the post-match press conference by claiming he was leaving Fenerbahce never to return. Bayern Munich hammered Bodo Glimt 5-0 at the Allianz Arena. Comer were 4-1 winners over RB Leipzig. That was Cesc Fabregas' first Champions League game as a manager. Finished 1-1 between PSV and Shakhtar Donetsk. And Slavia Prague lost 3-2 at home to Lens. Mikel Arteta says Arsenal's Ballon d'Or recognition is a reflection of the collective effort behind the club's success. Declan Rice, William Saliba and Gabriel have all been nominated for the Player Award. Well, David Raya is up for the Yashin Trophy and Arteta is shortlisted for Coach of the Year. The Premier League champions are also in contention for Team of the Year, and Arteta has described the nominations as recognition of a group achievement.
And then those individual rewards are because the team does an incredible job together. So it's good to see they have transformed that into major trophies. That's the important thing.
On the football show last night, Dion Fanning joined Ben Symes and Arthur O'Dea and said that there were some surprising names on the 30-man shortlist for the Ballon d'Or.
But the Ballon d'Or nominees, the 30-man list, you haven't seen any of these?
I haven't seen them, incredibly, because it's an endless topic of conversation in our house with my 12-year-old who just spends his time speculating with me about criteria for winning the Ballon d'Or. Who do you think is going to win it this year? Like, anyone I suggest, rubbished.
Well, would he have interest in it historically? Who's won it?
Yeah, a little bit, but he's just like, you know, who's going to win it? And I'll tell you why they're going to win it. So now
talked for 20 minutes and decided I was right.
Yeah. And I've said, no. Like, he won nothing. You know, there's just a criteria, like, of just, you know, won the World Cup, did well in the World Cup this year. I'm interested now to see who's on it. Well, in the World Cup this year and had to win maybe the Champions League. Fabian Ruiz was who he told me was, like, he felt was, like, in that sweet spot of success for kind of to make him a kind of a Ballon d'Or contender.
Okay. So this feels like exactly the type of conversations I would have had when I was younger. I'm going to give you, as the usuals are in there. The usuals are in there. I wouldn't be sticking to that criteria now. Kvaratskhelia is in there, Mbappe's in there, Kane is in there. Haaland, Rodri. Yeah, who is he? He's not going to win anything. He plays for Georgia. There's four names on the list in particular which I've picked out. Lionel Messi is still there as well. He's not in the four names.
Right.
The four names that I have picked out. Ferran Torres is there.
Right. Well,
Mark Cucurella is there.
Interesting. Yeah, you see, none of this is a surprise to me because I've been briefed on how the organising committee thinks. I've had a long conversation last weekend about this.
Well, this one would not be on any sort of organised committee. Sadio Mane is there.
What?
Okay. Sadio Mane playing for Al Nassr and Senegal.
But is that Cup of Nations related?
It's a good point. But did they not get then stripped of that title? Thing.
Again, that goes back to you like, you know, the one on the field of play.
Well, this one, final name for you. Julian Quiñones.
No.
Who says you?
Yeah.
The Mexican winger from the World Cup.
Yeah, got the first goal, didn't he?
He got the opening goal of the World Cup and scored a rake of goals for some team in the Saudi Pro League. He is on the 30-man shortlist. 10 players from PSG. 5 in the Premier League there. Bruno Fernandes, Declan Rice, Gabriel, William Saliba and Erling Haaland. And 7 in the Liga. Only 1 in Serie A. Lisandro Martinez. Finally, I will leave you with this. The Levy Ashton Award for Goalkeeper of the Year. There's all the usuals. David Raya is there. Unai Simon is there, obviously, because he won the World Cup. Vizinha the Cape Verde goalkeeper.
Well, that's fair enough.
Is nominated
that's
for goalkeeper
enough. That's fair
of
enough.
The year. That is about all we have time for, folks.
You can listen back to that in full in your OTB Football podcast feed. Become a member and subscribe at offtheball.com/join. Newcastle boss Matthias Jäisle says he won't change his approach on the touchline despite being booked during last weekend's 2-2 draw at Bournemouth. The German was shown a yellow card for repeatedly leaving his technical area, but he felt the punishment was harsh.
I hope I don't need to adapt. I was really clear that I was disappointed. On my point of view, if you're 20 centimeters out of your box and you encourage and support your own team in a positive way, in an emotional way, I'm not sure if that is then a yellow card.
News out of Newcastle today, and it's good news for the club. Lewis Hall has signed a new long-term contract. Reports suggest the left-back has agreed a 2-year extension to his original deal, which would take his contract up to 2031. The England international has been the subject of interest from Manchester United, among others, but he has now committed his immediate future to Newcastle. Chelsea co-owner Todd Bowley and fellow investor Mark Walter are reportedly close to selling their stakes in the club to majority owners Clearlake Capital. The American businessmen are expected to make a large profit on the shares they bought in the club in 2022. Clearlake will increase their stake in Chelsea to over 74%. And Amanda Staveley and her investor group PCP Partners admit they failed in their attempt to take over West Ham. They were unable to acquire the shares of the Gold family or buy David Sullivan's stake. Getting both would have given them a share of over 50%. Daniel Krutinski has struck a deal to take his stake to 46%, which will make him the largest shareholder. That's all we have time for in today's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. We'll be back with more next week.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Off the Ball Rugby Roadshow is coming to your province. Join some of the biggest stars from Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht as we travel round the country to preview the 2026-27 rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events.